given them the number.
Shall I go ahead? Thank you very much, and thank you to the committee for the opportunity to make Tuaranang's submission on the Protection from Harassment Bill. Just give a little bit of background to Tuaranang. Full name is the Tuaranang Legal Advocacy Centre, and we're an NGO established in 1996 to eradicate the victimisation of women by
men. I'll let you to the time.
Sure.
You made your presentation in 20 minutes. But you've taken 5, so I'm going to give you 15.
Okay.
And then we will engage you.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I think just to provide some outline as to our particular interest in the bill, is that the organisation was a member of the Law Reform Committee that drafted the Domestic Violence Act, and therefore has an interest in this bill given its close relationship to the Domestic Violence Act. And also we provide a service in that, and through this, I think it assists a lot of women who are either experiencing sexual harassment in the workplace. And I think I've also seen or want to suggest that there should be some sort of concordance around harassment, labour legislation, labour approaches to dealing with harassment, as well as this particular piece of legislation. And I think the work that we've done with women over the years really highlights the need for the Protection from Harassment Bill, and I think at the same time some concomitant strengthening of the Domestic Violence Act. So many of our submissions are both in relation to Protection from Harassment Bill, but also go to suggesting amendments to the Domestic Violence Act as well. I think our experience over the years has also shown where there are some very important gaps. So I think just very briefly, to look at the definitions, our submission. We generally support the definition, but would like to make the following proposals. That you amend Section 112 of the Domestic Violence Act, because the Harassment Bill's definition of harassment is far broader. So I think one would, again, in order to keep the bills relatively similar, is to ensure that the Domestic Violence Act's definition is the same as this one. And I think also stipulate that even one single instance of harassment be defined as harassment. And this is in keeping with the NEDLAC Code of Good Practice on the handling of sexual harassment cases. I think if you leave it open, that could be left too open to interpretation. You may have some presiding officers who think that somebody needs to be subjected to this treatment for a number of years or on a number of occasions, whereas others may think that even one instance is sufficient. So we feel that should be stipulated and set out quite clearly. I think the other issue that has come up is the recording, watching and disseminating of information to unrelated third parties. Here we've seen, I think, particular instances in our own work where pictures are forwarded through Bluetooth or videos are placed on YouTube and the like. And this is not necessarily addressed by the bill. I mean, I think the Sexual Offences Act for some in some instances looks at where pictures of children are disseminated, especially one has seen cases of rapes of adolescent girls being filmed and then forwarded on to friends and through Mixit and through other networks. And I would like some thought given to how one could deal with the dissemination of that kind of information. We do note, of course, that concern does need to be balanced with the freedom of expression and the public interest, and the public interest. So I'm not sure if one requires a public interest definition that will say when such material can be forwarded or put out into public, when it is genuinely in the public interest, and when it is not. And then finally, we do think there needs to be some kind of catch-all provision, and here we've looked at the section of the DVA and suggest that this gets put in as well. And we've added a word here as well, and that possible catch-all provision could be any other controlling unwanted. And here we're again looking, I think, at what the NEDLAC Code of Good Practice says on sexual harassment, that the word unwanted. But any other controlling, unwanted, or behavior but towards a person or related persons where such conduct harms or may cause imminent harm to the safety, health, or well-being of that person or related person. I think, so that deals with our additions to the definition of harassment. Thinking to the section on the consideration issuing of protection orders, reasonably possible is incredibly relative and subjective, and we do think it would be important to impose time frames. I think just from our experience in for the Domestic Violence Act, this could be left for days, possibly weeks, and I think some kind of time frame may need to be set. We also think it needs to be specified that the applicant should never have to serve a protection order unless accompanied by a police officer. It's our experience, the Domestic Violence Act, that far too often it gets given to the applicant to serve or to go and find the harasser herself or to even take it to the police station. We would also suggest that where an interim order is granted, that the court must prioritize the date of the final hearing, because at least those who have an interim order do have some protection. Those who have an interim order is granted sit without protection until a final hearing. So we think that those who don't have an interim order should really get a final hearing date prioritised as rapidly as possible, so that they are not left for weeks or months at a time unprotected. Again, this is something we've noticed with the Domestic Violence Act. I think if we look at the court's powers, there are a number of additions that we would like to suggest for consideration be included. Firstly, the law doesn't protect those who do not know the identity of their harassers. And this is a really common problem, I think, with a lot of stalking and harassing behaviour. One doesn't know who the person is. So a protection order will be useless under those circumstances. And I think those are often, in our experience, have been the women who've struggled most at police stations, is that when police officers have said, well, no crime has been committed, you don't know who this is, don't waste our time. So we think an extra addition that should be added is that the courts be ordered to that the courts be empowered to order the police to investigate the identity and whereabouts of the perpetrator. That could be one additional power. Just as the Domestic Violence Act enables the court to instruct the police to remove weapons or provide a protective escort. So I think what the point you want to make is that instructing the police to do something is not necessarily unusual. Although I think another problem that we've had, and again we don't see this translated into the Domestic Violence Act, is the amount of harassment that occurs via the internet, via email, and via cell phone. And we'd like to suggest that, in particular, this act be cross-referenced with RICO, as well as the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act, both of which give certain powers in relation to dealing with electronic communications. And that this protection order could, in some instances, act as a kind of application to compel service providers to act. So firstly, Section 205 of the Criminal Procedure Act and RICO can compel disclosure of information by an electronic communication service provider. That can be a very time-consuming procedure. So we'd like to suggest that the protection order can act as an emergency application in order to get Vodacom or MTM to rapidly disclose details of where possibly the cell phone is, where threatening or harassing SMSs come from. Certainly, SMSing and calls from private numbers feature very prominent in the harassment that our clients bring to us, and there's often no means of identification. But I think if we looked at CPA and RICO with the Protection from Harassment Bill as well as the Domestic Violence Act, that could to some extent address that problem. And I think also just looking at Section 77 of the Electronic Communications Transactions Act, what we have sometimes seen, for example, is situations where, particularly in domestic violence cases, where a former partner or disgruntled lover may take pictures of his former photos from a happier time and put them up on a website address and create a false website and claim that this woman is now advertising sexual services. So we think that Section 77, which is a takedown, which allows for takedown notification, should be cross-referenced as a kind of unlawful activity, and that the protection order can act as a notification to the service provider to take down immediately that website and other offensive harassing material. And then the other opportunity to look at is Section 81 of the ECT Act, which allows for cyber inspectors who can monitor or inspect any website or activity on an information system in the public domain and report any unlawful activity. And a subsequent section also allows for the police, with powers of inspection, search and seizure, to apply for assistance with a cyber inspector. So again, I think that if we cross-reference this, could become a power of a court, and that the protection order issued in terms of the bill can function as such a request for assistance to the cyber inspector, and that this recommendation obviously also be included within the DVA. So I think if we cross-reference RICO and ECT, it could help deal with aspects of cyber harassment. I think the other point to look at is in terms of jurisdiction. Again, this section could also look at Section 90 of the ECT Act, where it says even if somebody hacked in the US, for instance, and the crime was committed here in South Africa, South Africa would still have jurisdiction. So then where one has harassment via cell phone and email that's coming from another country, the person receiving it is South African and is in South Africa at the time. So that could potentially then give the police jurisdiction to be able to compile information from those service providers and obtain the necessary information. I think in terms of the regulations and policy directives, we would like to propose a number of additions be made to this section. The first is that in September 2003, there was a guideline circulated to police members on dealing with complaints around children who alleged they were being stalked, and that this guideline should be elevated to a national instruction. And I think there should also be reference to national instructions that specifically deal with cyber harassment, how it should be investigated, how it should be dealt with, how to deal with cyber inspectors. Also, I think there should be a provision inserted mandating the development of training officials for police officials, prosecutors, and the like. This is, again, something that was set out in terms of the Sexual Offences Act. We would also like to suggest that these training programs be tabled in Parliament within a set time frame, again, rather like the Domestic Violence Act, And I think also, in order to give due recognition to the problem of cyber harassment, that the Department of Communications should also be involved in such training. We also note that there are currently very few, if any, cyber inspectors in existence, and we would like to suggest that this committee liaise with the Communications Portfolio Committee, as well as the Department of Communication, to investigate how the process of appointment could be speeded up. We would also, and I think supporting a recommendation that the Law Commission made, is that the Department of Social Development need to compile risk assessment guidelines, so that this would assist in guiding the police and courts to look at identifying immediate safety concerns, including threats of violence, threats of suicide, or the history of mental illness. And I think, again, borrowing from the Domestic Violence Act, we would like to suggest that the Department of Justice annually table a report in Parliament detailing the number of protection orders applied for, granted, and made final in terms of both this bill as well as the DVA. At this point, I don't think it is publicly made available how many application protection orders are put forward, so I think this would be very useful information in order to gauge a sense both of the extent of those who are seeking protection from both acts. And I think it also help give us some thinking into what's the kind of assistance and help that is required. I also wish to add verbally another recommendation, is just looking at regulations and policy directives. Section 17.4 does allow for disciplinary steps taken against a police officer or prosecutor who fails to comply with his or her mandate. I'd like to suggest that we also consider disciplinary steps taken against clerks. Section 3A of 17 does suggest that directives should be issued to clerks, and I think as we suggest that police and prosecutors be disciplined if they fail to follow their directives, we would like to also suggest that the same apply to the clerks. And then I think finally, harassment and stalking are very difficult matters. They require, as one has seen with the need for risk assessment and other analyses and guidelines, a certain amount of knowledge of the psychology of the type of person that you are dealing with. So in addition to the specialised training that I think would be required for the police in terms of handling such complaints adequately, there may need to be some consideration as to whether or not this is a category of crime that should also be added to the mandate of the Family Violence, Child Protection and Sexual Offences Units. They already do have specialised knowledge in relation to dealing with sexual offences and domestic violence. So I think they could probably be a very appropriate specialised arm of the police to be able to deal with these complaints adequately. So I hope I have been able to finish in the time allocated.
Thank you very much, Ms. I hope you spell your pronounce your name Betten?
Yeah.
Betten. Very much. Indeed, you did cover your time. Members? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The presenter stated that a lot of women experience harassment at the workplace, and I agree. Having said that, it is common cause that a lot of men, MBN, experience a lot of sexual harassment in prisons. Now, how do you, as advocacy, look into that one? Please comment on that. Sheva, please.
This is really a point, not really a question, but you're talking about the cyber inspectors, you're quite right, there are virtually none, but you must also look at not only the communications department but also the Hawks, because I know they are looking into that, and I have asked about the cyber crime people, and I know they have one because I've dealt with him, so hopefully they'll get some more soon.
The clause relating to communication, I mean, just firstly, maybe the first point is you said you're involved with the Law Commission in a report.
Very many years ago.
Yeah.
The Domestic Violence Act.
So presumably these issues were raised then, or they...
The issues around cyber harassment?
Yeah.
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. But anyway, if you've look at the definition of harassment, it includes engaging in verbal, electronic or any other communication aimed at the complainant or a related person by any means, whether or not a conversation ensues. Would that not cover the aspect of dissemination of material relating to the complainant, notes on their Facebook page, that kind of thing. Is that not covered there? I had a debate with the officials about was cyber stalking, in the lunch break, was cyber stalking covered in terms of the happens to be? And I think there is merit that maybe a magistrate may define happens to be as happens to be physically, but not in cyberspace, although I understand other jurisdictions are not going for this. But I suppose the first one was whether B covers your point. Then the issue of the reasonable time, I'm not sure how we deal with it.
Mm.
In that you can say, as in, I think Criminal Procedure Act, people have to be brought to court within 48 hours. And you then go to some police stations and find that they interpret it as 48 hours. So the person gets arrested today. You don't have to take them to court tomorrow because they only have to be brought to court within 48 hours. So I would have thought reasonable is fine. And then you list in your submission a problem relating to the service of the order. But, the service of the order is defined as immediately.
Mm.
And I don't think one can do anything more than that. And then I'm not sure about the concern that about the complainant having to serve the order, because it's the complainant's not mentioned. It's the court directs, where's the section? The court must direct it, and then it's the sheriff, et cetera. There's no mention of the complainant. So I'm not sure how then officials can, of the court can then expect, or the police can expect the complainant to do it. Obviously anything is possible, but then that would require monitoring and stopping when that happens. The last point is, I understand that the monitoring of the Domestic Violence Act has gone to the Civilian Police Inspectorate. So maybe you would want, I don't know if you've looked at that, or and it's something I think we should be looking at, is should the monitoring of this bill in terms of the issuing of protection orders also not go to the Independent Police Inspectorate? It was taken away from ICD because of problems with that. So it there may be a consistency on that level.
I think certainly the question of the harassment of men is an important one, and I think it is important that legislation, as is the case, be written in a way that is gender inclusive, that recognises that both men and women can be victims, that very often it's the fact that men may be physically or biologically male, but in their gender coded as feminine, get abused in some ways. One can see that many of the men who do get harassed in prison are often seen as so-called women. So certainly gender would be playing a role, I think, in some of the harassment of men, and it's just as important that they be protected as women. So I would assume the legislation does deal with this, because it is written in a pretty gender-inclusive way. It doesn't exclude anybody. I think the question of how one deals with sexual violence in prisons is a massive study all of its own. Correctional services, I don't think, have come up with any successful solutions as yet, so if the Justice Committee is able to take it on, that would be excellent. So that's really just my response. Yes, and I think it would really be very helpful if you could push for more cyber inspectors or more attention to be paid to what is going on in cyberspace. In connection to the last set of concerns, I do think that some of them are probably matters of interpretation and therefore could probably be adequately dealt with through training. So I think to some extent you're right, if one did train magistrates to understand, especially if they're not terribly technologically savvy themselves, what goes on in Facebook, what goes on in Mixit, and to think about that, that's possible. It could possibly be addressed through that. But that, I think, if one could specify very clearly that training must look at the whole question of cyberspace and its uses. But if I could give that some more thought.
Yeah, because maybe it's to come in on that point.
Yeah.
I would agree with you, training's important, but I think the easier one puts it for the magistrates, the better. Because you may have lots of training and then you get some new magistrate who's appointed who
doesn't
understand the issue. So I think for both police officers and magistrates, the clearer it's put, the better for everybody concerned.
Mm. May I look at that and come back to the committee? Thank you. I think in relation to service, again, there seems to be, I think the Protection from Harassment Bill, and I'm sorry, I don't have the Domestic Violence Act in front of me, but I actually think it's better in terms of specifying who serves. So if anything, one may want a slight amendment to the Domestic Violence Act to follow the same service here, because in practice one certainly sees clerks and police officers asking women to serve. This is stronger, so I would perhaps like to see the Domestic Violence Act amended to follow the same lines of service set out here, which I think could prevent that in terms of the Domestic Violence Act. So I think that would be working backwards, using one piece of more recent legislation to address an older piece of legislation. In terms of the Civilian Secretariat for Police, yes, I think because that legislation has not been enacted as yet, this would be the time to have that discussion with them. And one of the first things they are going to have to do is develop regulations around reporting and monitoring. So I think it would be very important if this committee could engage with them around the discussion of what should be in those regulations, as well as the policy recommendations that they're going to need to make to the Minister of Police around oversight and the possible role of reporting here. Did that answer all your questions?
The time.
Oh, right, yes.
The reasonable, you don't like reasonable time, but my worry is if you specify a time, then your well-meaning or otherwise police officials, court officials rather, may then take it, as the police sometimes do with the 48 hours, bring into court within 48 hours, that it must be 48 hours.
Mm.
So that's the problem. So aren't we safer with reasonable? And then the service issue, because in your submission you talk about service which took 15 days. I don't know if it can be any clearer than we've got it in the bill, or than it is in the bill at the moment, which is immediately.
Mm. I think that is more a practical problem of implementation, and I think one would like to see some consideration here. It's not talked about here, but in the Domestic Violence Act, there is supposed to be a means test, which, if applied, should mean that the court carries the cost of the sheriff's fees to serve a protection order. In practice, we've seen that the courts don't do that. The Department of Justice has never established the criteria for that means test. So individual courts use their own. And those who haven't budgeted then simply leave it to the police to serve. And I think one then leaves it, it then becomes up to the police as to when they have the time, the resources and the vehicles to go out and serve. And that's why things can take so long. We've done a little bit of research, and I'm happy to supply you with the figures that compared the time taken for a sheriff to serve versus a police officer to serve, and not unsurprisingly, the sheriff serves faster because that is their job. So I would almost be inclined to want to suggest that one considers the question of making the courts responsible for the sheriff's costs, or making the sheriff chiefly and primarily responsible for service, because that is their job. They do have to prioritise it. Whereas the police, to be fair to them, have many other competing priorities and a shortage of vehicles, etc., etc., etc. So I think one could speed up things if one made this primarily a sheriff's responsibility, if one got the Department of Justice to do directives around a means test, fair criteria, and getting the courts to absorb the costs, and then ensuring that courts budget every year to ensure that they can pay sheriff's fees for those complainants or applicants who cannot afford those fees. So I think that might be a way in which to speed up some of the service issues, because I think it turns out to be more of a practical problem than necessarily trying to stipulate time frames. I hear what you're saying about reasonably possible, but reasonably possible can be about how long is a piece of string off, and some courts might think if we are very overburdened this week and we are short-staffed and we don't think this matter is terribly urgent, a week will be fine. And I think one wants to put some sort of limit on them taking too long and deprioritizing, because one has seen this happening with some of the protection orders, that they'll receive the application, might take them 2 or 3 days to decide whether or not the interim is granted, and they'll still expect the applicant to phone the court every day to ask whether or not they've made a decision. So I think hearing what you say, one might want to say, put a maximum limit that it should not take any longer to prevent it be a week being spent on thinking about it, because too many other queries are intervening and seeming more of a priority.
Yeah, I've just found the domestic violence provision, and it actually says that on the issuing of a protection order, the clerk of the court must forthwith, in the prescribed manner, cause the original to be served on the respondent. So there's no
okay.
provision there for even
the
complainant, applicant
okay.
to serve it. So we need, I mean, maybe it could be covered in regulations, or otherwise we need
yeah.
to, I think it's probably better not to specify it in the Act itself in case things become too, because we have no idea really how many of those applications are going to be, and whether the sheriffs or whatever will be able to cope either. So maybe we just say, maybe we must look at how the manner prescribed is dealt with in the domestic violence as well as the
I mean, my fear with specifying a time period is, as with the 48 hours, that will be the time period.
Yes.
So if you say a week, or if you say 5 days or 4 days, that's how long it will take. It won't be done that day or the next day. Maybe, I mean, so I think it's something to look at.
Mm.
So maybe you could come back to us. Maybe if one says on an urgent basis,
yes.
which then brings in the word urgency, and it's more, I suppose, like an urgent application. I don't know if magistrates know about urgent applications, but anyway, yeah.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I understand exactly what Mr. Jeffrey's saying, but the thing is, I mean, at least if you have within 48 hours, at least you know it has to be done by 48 hours. But if you say it's urgency, we all know the public services idea of urgency. And at least then there is a maximum. Even if they use it as a maximum, at least we know it'll be 2 days instead of 2 weeks.
I think the recommendation has been made.
Mm.
And during deliberations, members will engage. That will include me. I don't know if you have...
There's one point that I think we need to be a bit careful, because the Domestic Violence Act is not before us. We would have to be... I don't know if we can amend the Act unless it's an incidental amendment linked to this bill. We would have to go through a process of hearings and stuff like that. So we may have to say any amendments to the Domestic Violence Act must come later, or go back to the department or whatever, just to warn you of that in terms of our processes. So we can't unilaterally affect an amendment to the Domestic Violence Act without having consulted the public, etc.
I'm not deliberately trying to answer you everywhere, Mr. Jeffrey's speech, but I know during the hearings when I was on the police committee recently, the Secretariat has undertaken to do a full investigation and rehash and overhaul of the Domestic Violence Act. So perhaps we should, from this committee, refer it to the police committee and ask them to liaise with the Secretariat.
Please. I'd really like to support that, because the CSP is in the process of doing those regulations around the police. I think the important thing would be to specifically, in terms of the clerks, make directives around service that are very explicit, because they do, even though the Domestic Violence Act says that, they seem to invent any other possible ways to not have to serve or give it over to the applicant. So I think one of the directives must be around service.
Thank you very much. We will consider your views, submissions, and so
thank
on
you.
As you process the bill. And again, we are very grateful you made time to come and spend some useful time with us this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Bishops, Catholic, Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference. You can take the seat next to her, and please, let's switch off your mic so that we can get the other mic going. Right, thank you. Welcome. We are in your hands, ma'am. Tell us your name. Oh, listen, at the bottom there.
Yeah.
Right.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Lois Law, and I am doing the submission on the Catholic Parliamentary Liaison Office on the Protection of Harassment Bill, which is quite intimidating after the very erudite remarks made by so many people this morning. and it was very recently. It's a very, very general and short submission. The church is concerned with the vulnerable, and this bill is concerned with the vulnerable. We welcome this opportunity to engage with the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development on the significant matter, which seeks to ensure and protect the dignity, privacy, and safety of citizens. Many vulnerable groups in our society are subject to harassment and indeed to physical harm. For example, the issue of xenophobia, the harassment of refugees and those perceived to be foreigners, those of differing sexual identities, elderly women perceived to be witches. In addition, there are more well-known problems relating to ethnic, gender, and racial discrimination, which also give rise to harassment. Apart from the legislation now being discussed, public education programs countering such prejudices are urgently needed. We do have some specific points. This bill is particularly welcome in that it addresses many of the lacunae in the Domestic Violence Act. Specifically, it seeks to protect the rights of those who are not or are not no longer in a domestic relationship with the respondent. However, the reach of this bill goes much further and extends to other aspects of our social discourse and the protection of the vulnerable, whether they be individuals, groups, or organizations. Furthermore, great emphasis is placed on the strict compliance with the parameters of the bill by the South African Police Force, both in terms of the delivery of protection orders and the enforcement should the terms of the order be breached. Those violating the order may be found guilty of a criminal offense. While we strongly support the bill in broad terms, we do have specific concerns. Firstly, there's no definition of stalking in the definitions. And this term seems to be used interchangeably with harassment in the public discourse, and greater clarity would be welcomed. We suggest that the word stalking be added to subparagraph A of the definition of harassment after the word pursuing. Secondly, it remains unclear whether or not forms of harassment known as mobbing and hazing are included in the definition. Mobbing would refer to the behavior of supporters of Jacob Zuma during his trial on rape, while examples of hazing would include brutal and belittling student practices. Thirdly, sexual harassment does not seem to have been addressed in the Act. We suggest that this form of harassment is as harmful as any other sort of mental and psychological harassment and should be included. We welcome the amendments of the Criminal Procedure Act, which places a greater obligation on the authorities to act decisively and with urgency. Firearm control has long been of great concern to us, so we welcome the provision made for the confiscation of firearms from respondents should this be deemed necessary. It is our hope that the provisions of this Act will contribute to greater gun control. The many difficulties in both the implementation and enforcement of the Domestic Violence Act suggest that there is a need for training of the members of the South African Police Services and officers of the court. We therefore welcome the provisions in Clause 17, 2 and 3 regarding the issuing of instructions and directives to members of the SAPS and clerks of the court respectively. We note that reference is made in paragraph 7 of the bill's memorandum to the need for funds to be put aside for the training of police officers and clerks, and we urge that a realistic amount be allocated for this purpose. We look forward to a publicity campaign as to what constitutes harassment and the legal remedies available in enforcement. Such a campaign would be a useful adjunct to the criminalisation of harassment and would hopefully contribute to a greater awareness of and a reduction of the problem. We are mindful that there are grey areas where the provisions of the Act may be used for the purposes other than those intended. For example, it may be used against investigative journalists and civil society organisations concerned with public policy issues. The experience of the United Kingdom with respect to the Protection of Harassment Act of 1997 suggests that although the Act was designed to protect people from stalkers, in recent years it has been frequently criticised as a weapon for corporations against peaceful protesters to stifle legitimate process. Companies have used the Act to apply for very broad injunctions to prevent any sort of protest against them. These injunctions may be granted not just against an individual or a specified group, but also against anybody with a notice of an injunction. The Act has been used to shut down protests against militarism and climate change. The Guardian columnist George Munberg argues that it criminalises protests, claiming the legislation blurs the distinction between civil and criminal offences. measures should be put in place to guard against such cynical exploitation of the proposed legislation. Various civil society organizations including the legal advocacy sector, the Women's Net, and the Legal Resource Center, and the Triangle Project have confirmed that the bill is silent on information and communication technologies, except to acknowledge that electronic means can be used to harass someone. They suggest that the bill should be used for a comprehensive protection measures to specifically protect children as they grow up in a technological age where they interact with people through online social media on a daily basis. We iterate in our previous submission in asserting that in a society fraught with a culture of violence, where crimes against the vulnerable are commonplace, it is our hope that this bill will bring us a step closer to the realization of a community with the rights to dignity, corporal integrity, privacy, safety, and freedom from fear are protected and promoted. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lo. Members?
Just one question, I suppose. I mean, you make reference to the UK Act, but your source is basically a Guardian article, and I'm just sort of interested in how that act was applied. You were here this morning, so although both Sanef and Davos's attorneys made reference to it, they didn't really respond to the thing of how it is applied. But I think it would be useful if we could get a copy of that article.
Thank
and if there's any other research that you've got access to that has been done on the application of that act.
Yes, we can do that.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am, for availing
yourself.
For the opportunity. We will take your input into account, and please pass our gratitude to the Bishop's Conference. Thank you. Committee, there is a matter before us that we might want to. Our program is done, more or less. Is that we've got somebody from Middle Africa Community Representative Council? Looking at the document, they are dealing with land evictions. Bonani can just explain. He was trying to explain to me what is happening so that we make a decision whether we actually entertain the input or not.
Briefly, it's submission HB number 3 from Middle Africa. It seems to be much about, some other kind of, harassment, but generally they talk about I think it's what's Prevention of Illegal Eviction and Unlawful Occupation of Land Act and stuff like that. But then, anyway, when I look at it generally, and I don't know really if it deals with the bill that is currently before the committee, and there is a representative of the organization here who was saying that, if given an opportunity, we would like to take the committee through the document.
Re bua hore na re santse re bua hore na re dumela go bolela hore jo. Thanks.
I must say I also read this last night and wondered which bill it was actually referring to. I didn't really see how it related to this.
If the representative has come from, I see they're based in Pretoria, Sosungube, Tswane. So if he's come all the way, it's a pity we weren't aware earlier, because maybe a meeting could have been organised with the chair of the Rural Development Committee. But seeing it's probably late for that, seeing we finished earlier, should we not give him a hearing? I mean, there's not much we can do, but he's just come all the way.
You can come here in front, sir. Please take a seat over here. Can I get that man? Kotsokwane. Kotsokwane. Mr. Kotsokwane, your paper is not relevant to us. So we are not going to take, you won't walk us through it. What you can do is to explain to us what you are doing, and we'll submit the paper to the relevant committee, which has to do with land affairs and rural development. We have looked at it, we are satisfied. It's not going to assist us in processing the bill. But we also know you've traveled very far. And that's why we'll give you the opportunity to explain your organization's functions, role in society, and but also what you think we can do in the bill to assist with the problems you are confronted with, but not walk us through the document. In other words, Scarabala Pampirega fell. Or Kalusetsa fella correct. Karnunzulitemo since morning. Which relates a Twitter, Yabatu, Kapatsui, Yabatu. So Tarbularo, Wena, how do you see or Malawore, Zamu, who got to Sabatuba, Utsunyan Kabana, Kai, Fell? I think that goes right.
My name is Michael Kotsokwane. Well, I would like to thank everybody for giving me this opportunity to highlight something here. My name is Michael Kotsokwane, the founder and the president of Middle Africa Community Representative Council. It is established in terms of Section 31 of 1996, recommended and recognized in terms of Act Number 19 of 2002 of the Commission on of the Commission for the Protection, Promotion for the Rights of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities Act 2002. It deals with all matters relating to affecting the local communities at the grassroots level. Right? Promotion of Administrative Justice Act is the key of success of the institution. In terms of this, the Protection from Harassment Bill, we are thinking of this bill must not be made only for domestic violence, but can be expanded to outside the Domestic Violence Act. That is the suggestion, right? In terms of the protection order, we are saying the protection order can be given to anyone who is violating or offending the harassment activity or to act harassment activities against the victims of harassment, not only within the domestic premises. A grassroots approach to law enforcement. Community prosecutions as a strategic project of the National Prosecuting Authority can be the mechanism in terms of the Protection from Harassment Bill, B1-2010, or dispute resolutions at the grassroots level to reduce the case backlogs and to assist the National Prosecuting Authority and magistrates in the court proceedings.
while in short, and failing to, let me say, denial or failing to provide electricity by ESCOM and municipal electricity distributions to houses left unelectrified for more than 5 years is part of harassment. And also we mentioned clean water, failing to provide clean water, proper sanitation is also part of harassment, whereby nearby areas is already provided with that particular development. A local municipal demarcation made against the will or agreement of the residents residing in that particular area is part of harassment and lead them to public violence against the government. If the demarcation board can sit and discuss the matter of demarcation with the stakeholders within that particular area, then the problem will not arise, according to our suggestion. Right, access to justice. We guided by the discussion document of the National Indaba on Legal Services Charter 2006, held at Sandton Convention Center, Johannesburg, by the former Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development, Mrs. Bridget Mabanda. The discussion document indicating that access to justice is the cornerstone of the Charter 2006, both in terms of equal ability of persons to access and use legal services, including courts, and in terms of their equal treatment within these services and institutions. Therefore, community prosecutions and independent tribunals services will be the mechanism for the Protection from Harassment Bill B1 2010 to be practiced and be a success. Grassroots approach to law enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mamad? Please, no, we're still going to engage you. You've seen how we work. When everybody says, what's the question, it's an auto.
Thank you, Chair. Just a question to be educated by Ndante Kolotwane. Now, why Middle Africa and not Central Africa?
Well, it's a chosen name.
Thank you very much.
I would like to thank you all. Baya danki, kalefo.
Samaga khotso mara.
Kalefo.
Dimabelwe. Thank you very much, members. I think we are done for the day. Meeting tomorrow. Could you start earlier tomorrow? 9 o'clock. Now, I think what is, let's look at the program. But I think we start at 9.
My understanding is that on a Wednesday we start at 9, yeah. So in spite of Ms. Schaefer's desires to sleep in later, it's 9 on a Wednesday.
Yeah, so we start on 9. I'm told down there at... okay. Where's the...
Thanks everybody for your cooperation. You made my work easy.
So Swain, I'm just sending you an email to you. Thank you.
Tuesday evening, separate Tuesday evening.
Well, we came to just ask how to deal with it. I'm going to close that day.